You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Wednesday, 12th of August. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Houghton, Johannesburg. On the show today, we'll chat with Mio Kruger. Markets at Sasol soaring on horror write-downs. Wayne McCurry on the case for the sterling yield with British American Tobacco. And then Vickers Frustenberg, he's from Future Growth Asset Management. I want to get a sense of how our government bonds are doing and how we're doing relative to other emerging market bonds as well. This show is proudly sponsored by FMI, a division of Bidvest Life Limited. Make your impact, protect your income first. The views and opinions expressed in this show do not reflect the views and opinions of FMI. Some morning headlines from MoneyWeb. W-shaped recovery for residential property market predicts FNB. And from Business Day, board to debate more speedy Eskom split. Morning markets, the US was red overnight, S&P 500 off 0.8, NASDAQ down 1.7%, Asia mixed, Sydney off 0.5%, and Tokyo up 0.3%. Commodities also mixed, oil green and gold, well, 1903. That, of course, after hitting 2065 on Friday under massive pressure. Rand, 1755. And top 40 opening call, looking for a red open, about 0.75% weaker.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting with Mio Kruger. She's a director at Kruger International. Mio, morning. Appreciate your time. Sasol yesterday, we finally got that update. A bit late, but nonetheless, results Monday, update yesterday. They essentially wrote down more than their market cap. The EPS loss is going to be more than their share price. The stock up 4.5%. I suppose the market's taking a view as it could have been worse, or perhaps just the view that the worst is behind them, sort of kitchen sinked it, and from now things look better. I scratch my head sometimes.
Me too, Simon. I must say, for me, I'd say the 6 months that we're looking at now, the second 6 months of this year, for them, it looks like the worst 6 months they've had since their start, which is in the 1950s. So it's very, very clear that things aren't going well at Sasol. I think if you bought the share, you probably bought it down in the dumps when it was trading at all-time lows and hoping to make a profit, which by now I think you've made. So I wouldn't be a buyer of the share at these prices at all. As you mentioned, the write-downs are massive. They're writing down nearly a billion, which is so big, I can't even remember the number, writing down 100 billion at Lake Charles, which is huge. And I mean, we know that production there was only ramping up, so we know that these numbers would probably start coming through the income statement now. But yes, for me, this wasn't a great result, and it was actually it actually shocked me. I didn't expect it to be that bad. But I think if you consider the fact that oil prices were really, really hitting them hard at the worst possible time, then it makes sense. And yes, I feel sorry for this company. It's a very, very difficult position to recover from. They still have to strong up their balance sheet. They're still in the midst of selling assets, and there's still that possible write-off on the cards.
Yeah, they didn't mention the write-off, but it's definitely still lurking out there. Gift Gwena on my Twitters, he said the worst impairment charges, not all of them, but mega projects, Rio Tinto, $14 billion in 2012, Anglo American, $4 billion in 2015, Vale, $1.7 billion in 2016, and in dollars, Sasol, $6.3 billion. So they're up there. This is as big a write-down as we've seen before. Reports coming through this morning that Airbnb is potentially filing for an IPO this month, going public by the end of the year. Now, obviously, we need to dig into the numbers. We need to get a sense of it. Is this something that would interest you guys at Kruger International? Is it sort of more a case of, yeah, but not maybe not?
I think it's at this stage for me a case of, yeah, but let's maybe just see. I think if we look at what's been happening during the lockdown for most of these renters, it's there's a couple of things that came to light that I actually sort of, I expected to see things like this, but it was a bit worse than I did anticipate, where we saw many, many people involved in Airbnb sort of going all in, boots and all. Mm-hmm. They were sort of mortgaging themselves up, owning a couple of properties. And when Airbnb were hit with the lockdown, it was a terrible state for them all. So luckily for Airbnb, the fact is they don't own any of these properties, so it can be very profitable. But even Airbnb had to cut back and sort of lean the business up during the lockdown. I think it's a great model. I think it's progressive and going forward, as we've seen with most of these exciting tech companies all in their own right. But this is one that I'd sort of wait and see out first before I take a stake there. I think that there's just much, much larger and more broad-based economic exposure companies that I'd rather have exposure to than a travel renting company at this stage.
Yeah, leisure in a pandemic is not the best place to be, perhaps. Banks yesterday on a local market, absolutely flying. And I can't help, you know, we saw miners under pressure because the gold was under pressure and coming down. And therefore, you know, money out of mining needs to go somewhere. These short-term moves that sort of from day to day that, you know, traders like me might fixate over, in many senses, for the longer-term investor, it's kind of noise, isn't it?
Yes, I think it is. But I also think that there's been sort of big changes within South Africa, and especially on our market, that people started to focus on what we are actually buying here and what the prospects of companies sort of repeating their historic performance in South Africa is going forward. So the light has actually shone on that quite extensively now during this lockdown, during the state of our government and what's going on here with all the corruption and so on. And people aren't that optimistic because they look at the consumer base and it's deteriorating at a rapid, rapid state. So banks do look at attractive at these prices, you rightly said so, even from a long-term perspective. The South African banks have always been sort of their balance sheets have been strong. They've mm-hmm. been managed well. We've got good banks. But, you know, when you consider the fact that the government is actually sort of prescribing them not to pay dividends, I think they will be playing a much larger social role in the recovery of this economy going forward than they've played in the past. So I don't think that we will see our banks sort of repeating the great times that they've shown up to now. And I don't say that that's because they're not good businesses. I just think that the market environment for them will be tougher going forward. And that's why I think when you consider buying these boots and all and filling your boots rather with these, then just be sort of cognizant of that and make sure that you have ample diversification away from the South African market when you buy companies that look really attractive on this side too.
Yeah, that's a great point. The balance sheets are strong. Our banks are incredibly well managed, but that growth for the next couple of years is going to be tough. Mia Kruger, Director, Kruger International, always appreciate your time.
MoneyWeb now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting with Wayne McCurry, he's a senior portfolio manager, FNB Wealth and Investment. Wayne, morning, appreciate your early morning time. British American Tobacco, my Twitter feed is full of people complaining about the share price, it's going nowhere, etc. And they're not wrong, but in essence, perhaps are we not looking at the wrong thing with British American Tobacco? We get a really nice and fairly defensive sterling dividend getting paid out, and there's a place for that in a portfolio.
Correct. I mean, this is clearly not a growth company. It's almost like a utility. You can even say the old-fashioned utilities. Mm-hmm. There's a great compounding effect of dividends here, and they show very, very good cash flows over time. Look, the industry is trying to reinvent itself. Traditional tobacco smoking has been on the decline for decades. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this last set of results, actually the decline wasn't that bad. But it was still 2%, you know, it's normally 4%. Mm-hmm. So they're managing to get quite nice margin gain because they've got the premium brand that they're charging more for. And, of course, they're working like crazy to get what they're called non-combustibles, alternate vaping, heat-not-burn going, and they got that as 10% of their turnover at the moment. So certainly that is getting bigger. But it is an ex-growth business. But ex-growth businesses aren't bad if you want to just get a good, solid, that's a bit like an old-fashioned telephone company. Yeah. It's not exciting, but it's quite reliable.
Yeah, I mean, when I was learning markets, you know, with my grandfather back in the 80s, I mean, he would talk around, divide the market into your exciting parts, which back then was gold miners, and then your boring parts of the market, sort of your utilities and the like. And he always said there's a place for them. They absolutely understand what the business is, understand, how they work, and sit back and, in the case of BTI, a dividend yield of over 5%, paying in sterling, so giving you that currency protection. Certainly less exciting, but no, in no manner does that mean you don't want to actually touch it.
No, totally. And I mean, you're getting about a 7% dividend yield or something like that. And even though we know what's happening with COVID and everything in South Africa with the banning of cigarettes, very, very small in their lives. So certainly COVID hasn't massively affected their revenue. In fact, their revenue gain, it's flat. And when you consider you've got a volume decrease and you're getting a flat revenue gain and they got an extra 0.5% on their margin, then that's not a bad result given what's happening to other companies.
Yeah, no, I agree 100%. And quickly to go to the other side of the equation, our diversified miners. I know you and I have talked around this before on TV shows and the like. I mean, their balance sheets are, the strongest ever. I mean, they really have got their balance sheets into a good position. And if we look at Sasol, we appreciate now during a pandemic just how important that is. The diversified miners are different beasts to what they were a decade ago.
Yes, pretty much. In fact, it was less than a decade ago. A lot of them were sitting, I wouldn't say on the brink of bankruptcy, but the brink was within sight in 2015. Eh?
Mm-hmm.
That's literally 4 years ago, 5 years ago, that's when they were staring down the barrel of a gun. But you've got to understand the beast when you talk about diversified miners. It's at this point that they've got to start spending the capital expenditure, because it's not like any other company. It's not like a service company. It's not like a banking company. Every single day when they operate, they're depleting their asset base. And they have got to, at some stage, start replenishing that asset base. So they caught a massive fright in 2015, because essentially that disaster was of their own making. They expanded hugely during the China years. Then when the China years more or less ended in 2008, they had already committed the capital. So it's not dissimilar to Sasol. They had spent $7 billion out of their $11 billion before 2008, and they had to take it to fruition. And all of these projects came to fruition in 2014, 2015, and flooded the market with excess supply, and the prices collapsed. Then they caught the most massive fright, and they cut capital expenditure. I mean, can't quite remember everything, but I think they cut capital expenditure from $120 billion in 2013 to $20 billion in 2017. They've got to start spending now. So the balance sheets are strong and healthy, but the capital expenditure is coming. They've got to start it at some stage.
Yeah.
It literally just shows you the cyclicality of these businesses going from on the verge of bankruptcy with massively overextended balance sheets to an incredibly cash-healthy position. And remember, Anglo American was there to sell Kumba to try and repair their balance sheet.
Yeah.
Can you believe that?
Yeah, and Kumba flying again, paying,
Kumba goes from 20 rand back up to, what's it now, 550.
And pays dividends of some 20 rand. And I like your point. They need to replenish their product, because this isn't an online business. They need to find those commodities. They need to start spending. But hopefully they do it gently and carefully. Wayne McCurry, always appreciate your insights. Senior Portfolio Manager, F&B Wealth and Investments. When you protect your monthly income against the risk of injury, illness and death, you protect your future and the impact you make on those around you. FMI has been protecting South Africans' income for over 25 years, constantly innovating to provide greater claim certainty and cover for more occupations than ever before. Make your impact, protect your income first. FMI, life done better. FMI, a division of Bidvest Life, is a licensed life insurer and authorized financial services provider.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Joining now is Vikas Furstenberg. He's head interest rate process at Future Growth Asset Management. Vikas, appreciate your time. Back in March, we got downgraded to junk as a country, which was, you know, we'd all been worried about it. We'd, you know, years of would it or wouldn't it. It finally happened. Of course, to a degree, overtaken by a pandemic. But truthfully, the initial response was our bonds shot out, yields rising as you know, investors sold our bonds. Since then, they seem to have recovered. How they been holding up in the last month or so? Are we seeing, you know, rates at reasonable levels?
Good morning, Simon. Yes, indeed. I mean, if you look at returns over the last month or so, that's the last running month, the all bond index for normal bonds, fixed rate mono bonds, is sort of outperforming cash and around about, I'm going to round it now, 1.5%
mm-hmm.
return for the all bond index, which is like, if you compare that to cash over the same period, less than 0.5%. So more than 1% outperformance. So things have settled down a little bit the last 2 months or so already, post the sell-off that you referred to.
I suppose the point is, I mean, you know, junk status, there is no upside to it. But, you know, as much as it scares us, there are investors, asset managers out there who can't buy because of their mandate. But there are another whole bunch who actually can and, you know, are looking at an attractive yield, as you point out, beating cash. There's a market for it.
Absolutely, Simon. I mean, you know, it's a point we always made is that, sure, it's not great, you know, to be running around with an investment rating like that. But, you know, rating agencies tend to be behind the curve. And you have a pool of investors out there globally, you know, at least more than half of them, you know, in terms of the available pool, wouldn't care about that. They don't care about, you know, whether you include an index or not. They're not index trackers. They're active managers like we are.
Mm-hmm.
And we will sort of make up our own minds whether we want to buy yes or no. So we won't wait for rating agents to indicate to us whether we should or not. And I think it's something that certainly you mentioned that, yes. SA yields look attractive relative to its peer group, both normal and on a inflation-adjusted basis. Obviously, there's a reason for that. We know that.
Mm-hmm.
There are two opposing forces at the moment. The short end pulled down by strong disinflationary forces, the huge recession, the central bank that's responding to it the way that it should. And then at the back end, you have concern about, and rightfully so, about the worsening fiscal situation. So the curve obviously is putting in opposite directions, but in the end, you know, it certainly sort of looks like things have settled a little bit. I think Solanas are still selling. They're not that keen at the moment, but this pace of selling has slowed significantly, and I think we should also bear in mind that, you know, they've been selling since sort of May 2018 mm-hmm. already. You know, if you look at their holdings as a percentage of total, from the peak of 43%, down to 30% at the moment, but it's slowed significantly. And yes, and SA, in terms of yield, looks attractive. You just need to know what you buy.
100% on that. A quick last question. I was chatting currency yesterday, and often our rand gets sort of bundled into a basket of emerging market currencies, Turkish lira, Brazilian real, etc. My sense with the bond market is that bond traders are much more nuanced in terms of yields and the like, and we don't really get that sort of you and EM, and therefore you all stuck together. Is that a fair comment?
I think there's certainly some truth in that, and I think it's probably it boils down to a few things, but I think one thing I'd like to sort of mention is, and you probably know this, I mean, the strong correlation that we had between currency changes or movements and the local rate of inflation, mm-hmm. both producer and consumer, it's a lot weaker than it used to be for a number of reasons. So, you know, so it's not a one-on-one. If the rand depreciates by X, it's not to say bond yields will follow by Y, because, you know, that direct link to inflation, which is the biggest risk for normal fixed rate bonds, is not as strong as it used to be.
Yeah, that's actually an excellent point. Really appreciate your time. Vikas Furstenberg, he's head interest rate process, Future Growth Asset Management. Thank you very much for your time. That's it for today. You'll find us live every weekday morning, 6:30 a.m. on the MoneyWeb website or the MoneyWeb app. Podcast every morning from 7 a.m. Again, website or app or wherever you get good podcasts from. This show was proudly sponsored by FMI, a division of Bidvest Life Limited. Make your impact, protect your income first. The views and opinions expressed in this show do not reflect the views and opinions of FMI. Massive thanks to my team, Eddie and Cordora, to you for listening, my guests for their time this morning. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.